welcome to Real Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 29th of June 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I do have to apologise. We didn't have a Real Britannia last week. I was very ill over the weekend, and we just had to put on a Greatest Britons for you. But we are back this week. I am feeling a lot better, and I'm very pleased to say that I have my co-host with me today, Mr. Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Yes, very, very well indeed. Thank you very much. It's been a bit of a wild weekend, I think, from the weather perspective. We've had blazing sunshine, absolutely blisteringly hot sunshine, interspersed with howling winds and torrential rain. So it's been a very eventful weekend, and I'm hoping that the weather will settle down as we go through the week.
Typical British weather there. Yeah, and an eventful weekend as well, with more stabbings in Scotland. An asylum seeker in a hotel in Scotland was unhappy about the meals he was receiving, so he went on a stabbing spree the weekend before. We had another stabbing spree in Reading that we could talk about. There's so much news that's on at the moment, but I picked one news story this week that really doesn't have anything to do with the stabbings, and it's more to do with the abuse that our white children are experiencing in the schools. It's an absolutely horrific story that is based around a new TV series that's being put out by Channel 4, and they say that this is in an effort to end racism. The article is called "The London School That Tried to End Racism," and I think the TV program is called that as well. Now, I haven't been able to actually watch the TV program. I think you might have seen a few minutes of it, but I have got a lot of quotes here about it that were in the Daily Mail. And I really want to get into this because we are trying to provide the antidote to this here at Radio Albion, particularly with the Greatest Britain series. And I think listeners will see what I mean as we go through this. Pupils in Year 7 at Glenthorne High School in South London were separated into affinity groups of white and non-white students to discuss race and ethnicity during a three-week experiment in Channel 4's new documentary, The School That Tried to End Racism. So they've been segregated there right from the start. The scheme separated children by race into affinity groups to allow them to have conversations and discussions about race. The goal was that children would feel free to raise questions and make observations that in mixed company might be considered impolite. Well, that all sounds great, doesn't it? White people in one area, black kids in another area, and the white kids can talk about what it means to be white, only that's not what is going on here. Professor Rhiannon, who is obviously black, explains, "Research shows for 11-year-olds, making friends from different racial groups is easier. But as children get older, there is a process of self-segregation where children split off into different racial groups on the basis of their ethnicity." What's wrong with that, I hear you ask. She says, "Intervening at this age is crucial if we are to target and change children's attitudes before they become crystallized with adulthood." So what she is saying here is instinctively, as children grow older, they instinctively want to be with their own kind, they associate with their own kind, and for some reason, she thinks that this is wrong. She thinks that these children need to be targeted, they need to have psychological manipulation to change their attitudes before they get into adulthood, to turn them off from their own people and turn them on towards other races. This is absolutely shocking. What do you make of this, Max?
Yeah, well, this is a kind of what I regard it as psychological abuse, really, of children. It's you see, if you educate children to believe that to think of their own race as being in any way superior, and to always think of their own race as being people who have discriminated against and exploited and enslaved other races, which is basically the basis of racial teaching in this country, and then you split people into various groups. And obviously, as far as the white group is concerned, when they're on their own and they discuss their race and their ethnicity, unless they want to be singled out as people who are thought criminals, then they have to say things which are damning of their own race, and they have to say things that are complimentary towards other races. And I think one of the comments that stuck in my mind from sort of reading about this was that I think it might have been the professor, but it was somebody else who was administering the whole thing, just said that the affinity groups with the white children, it was like a funeral, whereas the affinity groups with the black children was like a carnival. And quite obviously, what you can see here is that the way in which attitudes to race and ethnicity are taught in schools would tend to make the black children think that they have got every right to expound ideas about their race and their ethnicity, and to be proud of their race and their ethnicity. Whereas as far as the white children are concerned, the traditional way in which race and ethnicity is taught in schools is going to tend to make those children feel depressed. And so naturally, you would end up in a situation where if you are, as a child, if you've got a camera stuck in your face and somebody's asking you about your attitude towards race, etc., and you know that if you say the wrong thing, people are going to jump on you, going to jump all over you and accuse you of being a racist and, you know, perhaps discipline you or drum you out of the school, then obviously you're going to be very choked up and emotional about what you have to say. Whereas if you're somebody who can say pretty much what they please, because you're black and because as far as you're concerned, nobody's trying to heap any guilt on you, then of course you're going to have a jolly time when you're talking with your compatriots. And so that's exactly what they found. But I've only sort of seen the same sort of edited reports that you've seen, but the video clip of the young white kid with the ginger hair who effectively becomes so choked up with emotion and so choked up with feelings of guilt that he just can't think what to say. I think that is the clearest demonstration of emotional abuse that you could possibly find. And one of the statements he made was that even though he knew he'd done nothing wrong, he always felt like he'd done something wrong. And that's really what all this kind of education comes down to.
Well, what do you think of what they're saying here, though, about, you know, that this is somehow wrong, that children, once they get to an older age, they start associating with their own people? And she's saying that this is wrong, but she's not saying that's wrong about the black children, because she's telling them that, you know, they can celebrate their race. And as you pointed out there, they end up having a whale of a time when they're together on their own. It's the white children's attitude that needs changing to stop them from associating with white people. And it's entirely natural that you're going to associate with your own people. The reason why we have different races and different nations is because over thousands of years, we kept to the same people. We didn't intermix with these other races. That's why we have these different races and different nations. And the fact that we have them proves that it's entirely natural to be like that. And it's entirely unnatural to start trying to force our people to integrate with these other races, which will mean that they will interbreed with them, which will mean that the race is destroyed. It means it's absolutely destroyed once you start interbreeding with these other races. The what nature took thousands of years to create is just destroyed in one instance. And yet they think this is somehow positive. Well, let's get into what actually happened here with these different groups. Students, including girls Beth and Mayu and boys Bright and Henry, were asked to divide into white and non-white groups with the idea that the children could discuss their experience of race without judgment. Farah admitted she was struggling to know where she belonged, saying, "Where do I go? I'm half white and half Asian, and I didn't know which room to go in." The pupil, who has a white English mother and a Sri Lankan father, said her parents usually describe her skin as olive colour. She explained, "I don't really think about that, to be honest. Even though I look different to white people and black people, I don't think about it really. I don't want to be described by my race. I want to be described as my personality and who I am." Meanwhile, the other groups in the non-white group told her, "You stay here with us." And again, this is harmful to this girl as well, telling her that she needs to be separated by her race. Well, she's half and half. And again, this is the horrible thing about race mixing is the two parents will think, well, love is love. We love one another. That's all that matters. And then the child that is produced has a crisis of identity because they don't know what they are. They don't look like their mother. They don't look like their father. They don't look like any nation or race. And they're told that they need to be associating with the non-whites when they may have fixated upon the white mother more than the Sri Lankan father. They may identify more with white people. So you've got this crisis of identity here with people that are half white and half Asian, as well as all these children have been told all their lives that they shouldn't be looking at race and everybody is all the same. And here they are being told that they need to segregate themselves by race. And in actual fact, it's not their personality that is important. It's their race that is important. And again, this is going to cause neuroses because they're being told two conflicting things at the same time. On the one hand, they're being told race doesn't matter. You need to be judged by your personality. And on the other hand, they're being told, well, no, you need to be separated by race and you need to be thinking about race and you need to be putting non-white races' interests above your own, which is just going to cause confusion, which leads to these kids getting a depression. What do you make of this first instance of confusion here, Max?
Well, as far as this girl Farrow is concerned, she could legitimately claim to be either white or she could claim to be black as far as this experiment is concerned. However, what she would have witnessed in the classroom is that all of the education that they would have received up to that point about race and ethnicity will have heaped guilt on the white children. Because that's the way that sort of teaching is oriented, and it will have heaped indignation and whatever on the non-white children who will resent the fact that in the past their nations, etc., or the nations of their ethnic origin will have been subject to domination by European countries and by Britain possibly. And so she will then have a choice between, does she want to go into the group that has shame and guilt heaped upon them, or does she want to be part of the group that can celebrate the fact of who they are and can play upon the fact that they can heap guilt and shame on the other group anytime they want? And I think any smart kid in that situation is going to say, oh, I think I'll identify with the black group in this instance because it means that I'm going to be in the dominant position. And that's really what these teachers that do this kind of thing are doing, that they're placing the non-white children in a psychologically dominant position, and they're placing the white children in a psychologically submissive and browbeaten position. And the outcome of all this sort of thing is pretty predictable.
Well, we'll hear more about this girl Farrah later on. We'll get some more insights into the way that she thinks. But up until this point, all these children have been taught together. They've been given all this diversity programming. They've been told that they're all the same. They all have the same aptitude. And now they're being told, no, you need to be split off into these different groups just based on race. And they've been told that race doesn't exist. They've been told, oh, it's just the color of your skin. That's why this girl is confused, because she's neither black nor white. Well, in the white group, discussion was stilted and the pupils struggled to know what to say as Mr. Grant asked them, have you ever thought what it means to be white? One of the girls admitted, it doesn't really mean anything to be white. And I'll just stop there, because that just tells us the way that these children have been programmed. They've been told they have no culture, they have nothing of their own, it's all owned by everybody, it's all shared by everybody. They can't possibly say that they're proud of Robin Hood, for instance, because they can say, oh, yes, well, blacks were here in Roman times, so Robin Hood and Friar Tuck, they might well have been black anyway. So that can't be exclusively white. I'm just coming out with one instance of it there. And the fact that she says it doesn't really mean anything to be white shows the way that these children have been taught. Meanwhile, in the non-white group, the children danced and laughed and sang as they discussed their respective ethnicities and heritage. Bright revealed, "I love being described as black." Observing the difference between the two, Dr. Nicola said, "The contrast between the two rooms is phenomenal. This room is like a carnival, and this room is like a funeral." Henry told his group of white peers, "Listening to their group, it sounds like they are enjoying it a lot, but I don't know if that's because we're not there or..." So he's questioning this now. They are hearing, the white kids are hearing the other room, they're hearing them all having a whale of a time, all having a party, and the thoughts that are going through their mind is, that's because we're not there. They're having this great time because we're not there. And we're not there because we're white people, and it doesn't really mean anything to be white. You can see the psychological damage that is being done to these children by doing this. This is, you know, this is absolutely horrific. Can you imagine that, Max? You know, being a child and being separated from half the class and then hearing that half the class having a party in the other room because you're not there with them.
Yeah.
I mean, it could drive some of them to suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it is child emotional abuse, nothing else, basically.
How can it be allowed to go on? How can this be allowed to go on? And how can nobody is pointing this out? This is a mainstream television program where they are doing this, where they're torturing these innocent white children. I'm just, the black child says, "I love being described as black." You imagine what would happen if the ginger child had said, "I love being described as white." You know, he would have been accused of being racist. He would have been told, "Well, that's racist. That's white pride, that is. You're a Nazi. You're proud of being white." You know, the difference between the two, and the fact that nobody seems to pick up on this, nobody in the mainstream will talk about this. It's like they're all insane. It really is.
Because the way history is taught, it's taught in such a way that the white children aren't made aware of any of the things that white people have been, any of the good things that white people have been responsible for. And so the invention of the motor car, for example, it's only in recent years that there have actually been any motor vehicles manufactured on the continent of Africa. Prior to just a few years ago, apart from South Africa, actually, during the apartheid years in South Africa, I think they did produce some vehicles in South Africa. But other than South Africa, no motor vehicles have been produced anywhere in the entire continent of Africa up until very, very recently. And now they produce some very ugly looking cars. I can't think what they call them now, but they're very basic and very ugly looking cars, kind of like a sort of a world equivalent of Eastern European cars compared to Western cars. There's that sort of a disparity between the two. But the point is that motor vehicles were invented by Europeans, and motor vehicles have brought tremendous advantages to people that have had them available to them in our ability to travel around the world, in our ability to commute back and forth to work, etc. And they've been a massive boon. I mean, at the moment, because of environmentalist concerns, etc., people are not looking at motor vehicles as being quite such a wonderful invention. But in reality, they are a wonderful invention. And they have enabled lots of things to be done that wouldn't otherwise have been able to be done. So there's things like that. There's anything to do with electronics, the production of telephones, the production of recording equipment, computers, televisions, all of those things that everybody enjoys nowadays, they were developed and invented by white people. And so why shouldn't teachers say that to classrooms so that white children can develop some pride in knowing that our people have made a massive contribution to the history of the world? Instead of that, then, you know, we have this massive concentration on slavery in the period of slavery, as far as history is concerned. You know, I visited quite a lot of schools, and when you walk around the schools, what you notice is the children's work that's put up on the wall. And very often, if it is a work that's been put up by a class studying history, and what you'll find is that there's a 90% chance that the war will be displaying stuff that's either to do with slavery or it's to do with the Holocaust. And so what you've got there are two massively negative subjects from the point of view of the white children. And it's then little wonder that lots of white children have got no interest in history and lots of white children have got no knowledge of their nation's history. Whereas we have things like Google. Google was it yesterday that Google had their little Google emblem that was devoted to a black woman who died when she was in her late 20s, I think it was, but who had spent her entire life as a black nationalist. And she was being celebrated. She was somebody that probably 999.99 people out of 1,000 have probably never heard of, but apparently she was important enough for Google to put on there as a black nationalist who had done nothing but calculate and campaign for the to improve the situation of black people in white societies rather than going to Africa and campaigning for the improvement of the lives of black people in black countries, which probably would have brought her greater dividends. And yet she's being celebrated, whereas the, you know, John Logie Baird, who invented the television set, hasn't been celebrated or isn't celebrated to this, you know, as readily on Google as this black woman is celebrated. And so it's there's just this marked double standard in everything. And it runs through our education system, and that's why there is an epidemic of low self-esteem amongst young people. There is an epidemic nationally of young people taking drugs or suffering from depression and self-harming because they think there's nothing good about themselves, and they. They hate themselves and they hate their bodies, and all this all comes down to the way in which race and ethnicity is taught in schools, and it's a criminal campaign against the racial consciousness of our people.
They give them nothing to aspire to, do they? I mean, this is the thing. If you were to have asked this question 100 years ago, what does it mean to be white to somebody young and British? They would have said, well, it means that we went out and discovered the world. We mapped the world. We brought civilization to the world. We colonized areas that didn't really have people living on them. We brought the fruits of civilization to people that weren't so developed as us. We have a history of justice. We have a rich history of culture, and we have a duty to be the best people that we can so that we can set a good example to these other races who are not as advanced as us. And we have such a long history of our own that is the duty that we have, is to go out into the world and set a good example to these other races so that they can then emulate us. And hopefully one day they'll be able to have a civilization like ours in their own countries, and they will be up to the standard that is required to maintain those countries and run those countries and be successful in those countries. And that would probably have been the sort of answer that you would have had from a child 100 years ago. If you're just going to teach children negative things about whites, like you pointed out there, Max, like Holocaust and slavery, and both of those, there's no need for them to be taught negative and to have white people feeling guilty over them, because white people were the ones that did away with slavery. And even if you do go along with the Holocaust narrative, it was the rest of the white world that went to war against Germany. So both of those are needless for children to be feeling guilty over. But if you tell them that, they just end up hating themselves. And then they end up joining these groups like Black Lives Matter, and they end up desecrating the statues of their history. They end up wanting to tear everything down. They end up on drugs because their lives have got no meaning. They've got no identity. They've had their identity stolen from them and told that they don't have one. Everyone can be British. All these different races, they're just as British as you are. I mean, that's effectively stealing our identity. And that's what's being done to these children. And because it doesn't work, it doesn't create a utopia on Earth. It creates a hellhole. They have to divert more and more resources into trying to force people, trying to force this square to fit into a circular hole. And now they are at the stage of where they're psychologically abusing children of the age of 10 years old to try and force them to go along with this madness when they can see that it's all madness. Next, when asked to discuss race, a student named Henry broke down in tears because he was terrified of saying something which could offend someone, admitting, "Before I talk about race, I think about how it's going to affect me in the future. If I say something bad early in life, it could come back later in life." And he bursts into tears. And just remember, in the other room, where all the black kids are talking about race, they're dancing around and celebrating and singing songs, and just the very word race makes their ears perk up because they can talk about all the great things they've been told they've been done. But as soon as the word race comes up with the white kids, he's bursting into tears because he knows he can't talk about it, because if whatever he says, he's going to get accused of being racist, and it could go down on his record for the rest of his life. Imagine that, thinking at 10 years old, if I say something here by mistake, it could go on my record for the rest of my life. I can't recall worrying about things like that at 10 years old. He should be innocently playing with his friends at that age, not being concerned about something that he might say that's going to come back and haunt him. Do you want to comment on that, Max?
I was just going to say, when you watch the online clips of that particular point where he becomes choked up emotionally and then leaves the room, all of the black kids are all gloating about how funny it is, the fact that he's choked up about it. So it's just absolutely awful.
And just think, he's been told he's got bias as well, by the way. He's got this unconscious bias towards blacks, such an unconscious bias that he bursts into tears at the thought that he might unexpectedly offend them just by saying something. It's quite clear that he's got no intention of offending blacks whatsoever, but he knows that he could just say something by mistake, and then he would be accused of offending them. I mean, when you're a child, you see somebody that's non-white, you think, well, where do they come from? They're not part of my family because they're a different colour. It's quite an innocent question to ask. And all children are curious about things like that. And he could well have just asked somebody something like that and been told that that was racist and that was that was somehow harmful to the person that he asked it to. To think he's in tears and they're telling him that he's got an unconscious bias when he's in tears about the fact that he might just unexpectedly offend somebody, it's just unbelievable that people can't see what's really going on here. Speaking at the water,
it's like saying that you're committing a crime that you're not aware you're even committing, and you're guilty even though you don't know what you've done that's made you guilty. You're guilty, and that's why that young lad felt that he had done something wrong, even though he knew he hadn't done anything wrong, just simply because of that factor.
That's it. These children know that they're innocent, and yet they're being told that they're guilty, and that they have to feel guilty. Speaking at the water fountain with his friend Bright, and I think that's the black kid as well, his friend's black, Henry admitted, "I know they say not to feel bad about it, but you still feel bad about it because you know you've done something wrong." So he says he knows he's done something wrong, but he doesn't know what it is. So, and they say, well, don't feel bad about it. You shouldn't be feeling guilty about it. But they've just been feeding him with all this guilt. So he knows he's done something wrong, but he doesn't know what it is because he's totally innocent. Because, wanting to be with your own kind, there's nothing wrong with that. It's completely natural. Everything that is natural that white people feel that they're told is somehow wrong and it's beaten out of them. And even once it's all been beaten out of them and torn out of them, that they still have this guilt complex. It is so abusive. That's what this is. It's just naked child abuse. After a break, the teacher explained that the results showed there was an unconscious bias, with the majority of the class showing the bias towards white people by completing the task of associating positive words with them more quickly. And they had this exercise where they had to associate positive and negative words with different races. So obviously this exercise is weighted to show that white people have got they've got an unconscious bias towards whites, and they're therefore racist against blacks. So he's been told that he has this unconscious bias, even though he's bawling his eyes out because he's terrified he might offend somebody black by accident, by mistake, just by being himself. And yet he's being told he's got this unconscious bias. So he's done something wrong. And there's nothing he can do about it to put it right, because that's his race. He can't change his race. So there's nothing that he can do to actually put things right. So you imagine the guilt that causes in a 10-year-old yeah. child. I mean, it makes me furious to see what they're doing here. It really does. And the Professor Rhiannon, obviously, she seems to be taking pleasure in his discomfort. She says, Henry's experience as an outsider is a new experience, and it's quite an uncomfortable one. You know, no sympathy there whatsoever. Just pointing out that it's an uncomfortable one. And of course, what she means there is, well, blacks are treated as outsiders. Non-whites are treated as outsiders. Well, they are. They've immigrated here from the other side of the world. They're not indigenous people to these islands. So the fact that, they might feel like outsiders, well, that's just common sense, isn't it? It doesn't mean
if you migrate somewhere new, you're always going to feel a bit like an outsider. You know, people that migrate from the city out to the rural areas, they very often comment about how it takes, you know, perhaps a generation before the rural people accept the new come city dwellers as local people. And that's just the way that people are. It's there's nothing strange about that. And it just amazes me just how ignorant these people can be in terms of the way in which they try to teach racial equality, etc. And because effectively they're trying to teach something that doesn't actually exist. There is no such thing as racial equality. Races are different. They have different aptitudes. They have different emotions, different feelings, etc. That's a fact. It's also a fact that people like them. That particular phrase is a phrase that, you know, comes from sales psychology all the way back from around about the 1920s, that if you want to sell to a particular group of people, whether that group is defined by their wealth or defined by the area in which they live or defined by their academic ability or whatever it is, people like them. And so if you go to speak to a group of people and you're trying to sell them an idea or sell them a product, the more you appear to be like them, the more likely they are to take notice of what you say and to be influenced by what you say. The less you appear to be like them, the less likely they are to take notice of what you say and to think the way that you urge them to think. That's just human nature. It's got nothing to do with racism. It does also apply in the field of race, that people are more likely to trust somebody of the same race as themselves. People are more likely to like somebody of the same race as themselves. People are more likely to trust somebody of the same race as themselves. But that's just because people like them. If somebody is of a different race and you choose to go and live amongst people of a different race, then that's your choice. But you have to accept that you're going to have to work a bit harder in order to be liked as much as somebody who is indigenous to that area, just simply because people like them. And you've got to use other ways in which you behave to appear to the indigenous people as if you are as much like them as anybody who was actually just like them, in order to be accepted as much as as people from the indigenous group would be accepted. It's a simple fact of psychology, and to try and work against it is working against nature. It's working against the natural way in which our minds work, and the way in which evolution has caused us to think in order to equip us for the world, for the challenges that the world offers, and to try and suppress that is going against nature.
It's going against all the laws of the natural world. We have gene similarity theory, which means that you pick a life partner and you pick friends with a more than average amount of the same inheritable genes that you have. So you naturally pick people and surround yourself with people that have very similar genes to you. And that protects the kind or the subspecies or whatever you want to call it from turning into something else, basically. That's why we have all these different races. That's why we have all these different species in the natural world. You imagine if one species of bird started hanging out with another species of bird and then eventually interbreeding with it, you would lose those two species of birds. You would end up with something unnatural. And, you know, what gets me here is this, you know, where does this idea that this Professor Rhiannon, it seems to me it's like she wants vengeance. Henry's experience as an outsider is a new experience, and it's quite an uncomfortable one. Well, if she's had an experience of being an outsider, wouldn't she not want other people to have that experience, not actually take pleasure in somebody else having that experience? You brought up an analogy there, Max, of people from the cities moving into the countryside, and you know, they will feel like an outsider, but they don't think, well, I want to force the villagers to feel like outsiders. I want to force them to go somewhere and feel like outsiders. What they're far more likely to do is be more friendly to somebody else who has come in from the city to the village and make them feel at home, rather than having some desire to get your own back and make other people feel as bad as you feel. That's not the natural way to be, and that's not teaching children a good way to be either, to desire to get your own back on people. You know, you want to have a desire to help people, not to hurt them. That's what this is teaching, that it's okay to want to hurt white people for perceived injustices from the past. After the lesson was over, Mr. Grant explained that it isn't easy getting his white group to open up about race. Well, I bet it isn't, because they've been told any mention they make of it is racist. He said it was hard work. You never really talk about what it means to be white with white people, especially year seven students. And in contrast, Mrs. Odugbimi welled up as she recalled discussing race with her non-white group, saying, "I felt so privileged to be in the room with them to discuss these things." I mean, what a contrast that is. And they really don't, you know, they don't dwell on it. But that just says it all, doesn't it? The white kids can't say anything, and you never really talk about what it means to be white. And yet the black teacher, she actually wells up with tears, because it was such a lovely thing for her to be talking to the non-whites about how great it is to be black. Something that white people are completely denied. And she talks about how privileged she feels to be able to talk to them about these things. That's not a privilege. That should be a right. You should have a right to be proud of your race and to do what you can to improve your race and to improve the lives that your people have around you. What do you make of this, Max? Because it's so open here, isn't it? I mean, it even says in contrast, you know, the black woman wells up as she recalls discussing race with the non-white group, while the white teacher says, well, it was really hard work. You know, we just couldn't get them to talk about it.
Well, it is all fundamental to the fact that white children have been made to feel guilty, have been made to feel guilty when they've done nothing wrong, and guilty whatever they say. Because if you say that you don't see race, then that's regarded as incipient racism. But if you say that you do see race but you disregard it, then that's regarded as racism. And so as far as white children are concerned, the way in which race and ethnicity is taught about in schools today, whatever they say, whatever they do, they're going to feel that they've done something wrong. They're going to feel guilty. And the point is that, you know, if you are interviewed by, for example, a police officer on the basis that the police officer suspects that you've committed a crime, then you're not going to be as talkative and as jolly as you would be if you were talking with the police officer about a party that the two of you are going to be attending the following evening. And so, you know, if you feel that whatever you say, the teachers are going to view it critically, and that they're going to be looking for things that you say to twist and turn and present as something critical that they can then take issue with you over, then you are going to be pretty tight-lipped. You're not really going to want to engage in this kind of masochism where you recklessly say things, knowing that you're going to that the teachers are going to come down on you like a ton of bricks as a result of what you said.
And just remember, this is supposed to be an exercise in ending racism. I mean, it's an exercise in racial abuse, how you can use race to abuse innocent children.
It's an exercise in racial inversion, where what they're doing is they're creating a situation in which the white children are regarded as an inferior a subset of the class, and that a subset of the class that should be made to feel guilty and that should be made to feel ashamed, and where the black children are made to feel that they are a subset of the class that should be celebrated and whose history and culture, etc., should be celebrated always and never ever questioned. You see, a black child can say, "Oh, I don't like classical music because it's not the music of my race." Whereas if a white person still, "I don't like reggae music because it's not the music of my race," it's only the second statement that would be regarded as racist. The first statement would be regarded, "Oh, that's fair enough. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. Well, you're in touch with your roots." But as far as a white person is concerned, being in touch with your roots is a bad thing and something that should be discouraged and frowned upon.
And this inversion is based on false ideas as well. I mean, blacks have always been proud of being black in Africa. The idea that whites have lauded it over blacks in Britain is just not true. When we look around us, it's the other way around, isn't it? I mean, that's what we see here. That's what we see with the diversity quotas. That's what we see with the laws that are preventing us from criticizing them in public. We don't see that there's this white superiority over blacks. So what we see is whites empathizing with blacks. We see this young white child bursting into tears because he's frightened he might offend blacks with some of this unconscious bias that he's got, something that he can't do anything about at all. So what they are doing is inverting their particular understanding of how things are. But their understanding of how things are is completely flawed, because on the one hand, they tell us there's no such thing as race. Then on the other hand, they tell us that, we have to be thinking about race all the time. All these inconsistencies that there are in their beliefs, which are right at the root of all of this, I think. Well, after being separated, the groups came back together and are asked to provide feedback. Mackay, who is black, said, "I feel like it's a lot easier. I feel like it's good for us to talk about it and how we feel." Meanwhile, Lauren, who was part of the white group, explained, "We want the non-white affinity group to know that we don't think any higher of ourselves because of how we look." So we can just stop there and look. The black child talks about how great the black child feels, and the white child's first instinct is to say, "We want the other group to know that we don't think any higher of ourselves because of how we look." The white group are concerned about how the black group think and how they feel, whereas the black group couldn't care less about the white group. They're just thinking about themselves. I think this shows us what the white racial spirit is like. It is concerned about other people. We are altruistic people. We are charitable people. We've done so much for these other races by bringing them civilization. And even our youngest children will put other people first rather than themselves. And yet they're being told that they've got this unconscious bias. You know, I think this is very telling that the girl from the white group, when she's asked about what she thinks of it, she's more concerned about what the other group think than about how she feels. Whereas the black child is saying, "Oh, it's great. It's wonderful." You know, he's got no concern about the fact that the class has been split in two and the white group may be feeling a little bit left out. But that's the way that the white group does. And this is an example of how the racial spirit is different between us. We don't just look different. Our characters are different. Our racial characters are different. And this is when Henry burst into tears and said that he actually felt jealous of the other group. And I think this is another very, very common symptom. When you see white kids dressing up like they're black and rapping and getting involved in black culture, that's because they've been told that their own racial group has nothing. They don't have any culture. And with all the praise of the non-whites, they do actually feel jealous that they're that they're not non-white. And we have these white race hustlers that pretend to be black, that actually lead these anti-racist organizations. There's a female one in America, Rachel Dolezal. There's another one that's in the news at the moment, who leads one of these organizations that's saying we need to get rid of all the representations of a white Jesus. And I mean, the amount of black DNA that he must have in him, it's got to be under 1%. And yet, because of this imprinting that they've had as children, that it's blacks that are the elites in our societies now, they do actually want to be black. So again, this is an example of what's going on. It's like society in a microcosm, looking at the way these children are responding to this. Later, speaking to his parents, Kevin and Sarah, he cried again, explaining what we were talking about is what it means to be white. And it felt really weird. I didn't feel comfortable talking. Imagine that. He doesn't know what it means to be white because he's had nobody teaching him what his identity is, what it means to be who he is, the aspirations that he should have, what he is capable of achieving. Nobody has spoken that to him, because the whole of society is anti-white. He said, if I had the choice, I would be with my friends, not just by race, because that feels awful. And again, because he's had his whole life, he's been told race doesn't exist. It's just a social construct. And now he's being told, no, now you've got to separate yourselves by race. So this is going right against some of the deepest programming that he's had as a child. They're going against it. And of course, this is making him feel awful. And also this worry that he might say something that might affect him for the rest of his life. And Farah also struggled to discuss the topics with her parents, saying, even though I am half white and half Sri Lankan, I can't feel comfortable in a room full of white people because I know I'm different. And her parents explained, when she was quite little, she used to say she didn't want to be brown. Just, you know, these race-mixing couples that do this to their children. Can you imagine that? You know, a child isn't happy in their skin because they've taken an imprint from the white parent, and they can see that they don't look like the white parent. I mean, that must be so horrible.
The hypocrisy is that instead of the parents accepting the blame for what they've done themselves, they turn the blame on everybody else. It's not the fact that they have race mixed that is the cause of their child's lack of identity or whatever. It's the fact that the rest of society doesn't accept them as white.
Yeah, and also the way she says here that I can't feel comfortable in a room full of white people because I know I'm different. And that's the instinct. You imagine if a white child had said, I'm not comfortable in a room full of black kids because I'm different. Again, that would be put down on his record. He'd probably be expelled from the school for being racist. He'd be watched for the rest of his life. And yet, because she's half white and half Sri Lankan, she is quite okay for her to say that she feels uncomfortable in a room full of white people. And it should be okay to say that. Because race is real. This is the thing. These children are just coming out with natural instincts, and they're being told that they're wrong, or they're being told that they're wrong if they're white. You know,
going back to what Henry said about, you know, he was afraid that if something he said was wrong, it would be held against him for the rest of his life. Now, that's not something that a child imagines for themselves and thinks up entirely for themselves. That's something that he's been told. If you say something racist, if you say something that is detrimental to or hurts the feelings of anybody that's non-white, then that will be a crime that will be on your record and will be held against you for the rest of your life. Somebody, an adult, has said that to him, otherwise he wouldn't have thought it. And again, that is a criminal act of child abuse, in my view.
And none of this would be necessary if they weren't trying to mix all the races together within one territory. I mean, there wouldn't be such a thing as racism. The white children would be fascinated by the different cultures and the different peoples around the world. They certainly wouldn't be thinking they had a bias against them or anything like that. I dare say a lot of them would be wanting to go and visit those countries once they became adults, just out of curiosity and seeing the different ways that people live. And we know that's the way we think, because we came up with the science of anthropology, which was studying this, because it's a natural desire within white people to learn and to find out about these other cultures and do what we can to conserve them, do what we can to help them. Yet we're told that somehow we have this unconscious bias against them, even though we have these horrific programs going on in our schools like this. In the second affinity group session, the children were asked to bring in objects that reflect their own cultural background. Members of the non-white group showed off a diverse range of objects, including a certificate for Japanese school, Nigerian dresses, and a South African bracelet. But the children from the white group struggled to discuss their identity, with one of the pupils bringing in an English flag and another bringing a policeman's hat. So the white children couldn't think of anything to bring in to show off their identity, to show off their own cultural background, because they've been told they don't have one. They've been told that their cultural background is British, and to be British, it doesn't have its own individual culture. It's made up of all the cultures around the world, isn't it? The best British food is curry, of course. So we don't even have our own food. That comes from India. We don't have a history. We don't have an identity. And that's what they should be pointing out here, is the damage that's been done to these kids. They don't have an identity. They don't have a culture.
When in reality, the English children didn't have actually brought anything in. They could have, if they were in a school hall that's got a parquet flooring, they could have just pointed to the parquet flooring and said, "Parquet flooring, that's something that white people invented." If they were in a classroom that perhaps had a linoleum kind of floor, they could have pointed that and said, "That's linoleum, that's something that white people invented." They could have picked up the paper from their desk and said, "Paper, something that white people invented." They could have pointed to the ballpoint pens that people they were writing with and said, "Ballpoint pens are something that white people invented." They could have pointed to the glass windows and said, "That's something that white people invented." They could have pointed to the bricks that their school was made of and said, "That's something that white people invented." They were surrounded by things. They were surrounded by all of the riches of our civilization and the product of the white person's mind. And yet, because of the way in which they'd been browbeaten and made to feel ashamed, they couldn't think of anything to point to, which just exemplifies how terrible what's been done to them is.
Their whole history has been stolen from them. You know, their identity has been stolen, their culture has been stolen, their history has been stolen. And if they had come up with those ideas that you just did there, Max, again, they would have been accused of being racist, wouldn't they? It would have been accused of being a white supremacist because, surely there must have been papyrus or something before paper, and aren't there Arabs that live in Egypt now? So it must have been Arabs that invented paper. They would have come up with, reasons to have said that these children were racist if they had said anything like that. I'm surprised one of them brought in an English flag. He's probably been marked down to be watched for the next 6 years at school. I'm sure he's going to join the English Defence League because he thought to bring in a flag. And this other one, bringing in a policeman's hat. I mean, it's just, you have to make light of it because it's so tragic what's going on here with these children. None of them had any idea how to discuss their identity. And as I say, this is why we have Radio Albion, because this is the state of our youth. They grow up not knowing what their identity is. And that's why I want to have as much historical stuff as I can on Radio Albion. That's why we do the Greatest Britain series. That's why we talk about historical revisionism in Truthful Out Radio, because it's all about getting our identity back and giving the people that listen to us an idea of who they are and what they're capable of and what they should be aspiring to. I guess
the child that brought in the policeman's hat, I'm sorry to sort of introduce a sort of aspect of levity in this sort of thing, but the child that brought in the policeman's hat probably subconsciously associates law and order with white people and a lack of law and order with non-white people, and that's why they brought a policeman's hat in as a symbol of their race and ethnicity.
How racist is that? What a little white supremacist. But yeah, that would be it. That would be the instinct that's going on.
I'm not
saying
that child was a white supremacist. That child probably just did it. It was probably a subliminal thing. The child just looked around and thought, what is there in my home that is symbolic of white people. And they've probably watched the news and seen all the riots and things going on in London and seen that overwhelmingly the policemen were white and overwhelmingly the rioters were been black. And they probably thought, oh, policeman's hat.
That's what I mean.
They probably didn't even think it. It was probably just instinctive that they just associated a policeman with law and order, and law and order being a white thing.
Totally instinctual, totally natural, totally innocent. But of course, you know, that's wrong thing. It's all wrong thing. White people having any showing any sign of knowing who they are is wrong thing. I say that's why we try to counter that here at Radio Albion. We're coming together to discuss the exercise. Farah teared up as she explained she struggled with her race in the past. And this is the white Sri Lankan girl, remember. She recalled looking at magazines when she was younger and seeing beautiful white women saying, I just thought I'm not pretty. I just thought that the only way to be pretty is to be white. Now, this is really sad. And again, it's because this girl is half white and half brown. So, and because there aren't any half white, half brown natural nations, she's got the imprint of what it means to be pretty, to be white, only she's not white. And on top of that, she's living in a multicultural society where she's going to see white women all the time. And all the time she's going to be thinking, I could have been born white. I should have looked like that, but I don't. I look like this. But she can't say that to her parents, of course, because she loves her parents. So you've got deep psychological damage that's been done there, as well as there being two races within one person. And again, if we didn't have all this diversity, these other races wouldn't be looking at white women and saying, I wish I could look like that. Because the images of beauty that they would be seeing would be of their own kind. And also, I mean, yeah. this tends to say that objectively, white women are more beautiful than the other races. And nobody would have even thought of that if the races had been kept separate. But because they have been mixed together, instead of thinking, well, you know, we are more attracted to our own kind, we have effectively learned that white women are objectively the most beautiful women out of all these other races. And that wouldn't have even been discovered if the races had been kept separate, because they would have just seen their own people. And they wouldn't have looked at white women and thought, well, I wish I could look like that. So again, you know, the harm that's just done through diversity, it's got to be the most damaging thing that's, you know, the most damaging idea that has ever happened to the world, I think.
Yeah.
And another point here as well, you've got all these skin whitening creams as well that these non-whites take, where they're so desperate to make themselves look as white as possible. They're talking about trying to ban some of them. They're very big in India and in China. But these, you know, the offspring of these mixed race couples, they are the main users of these skin whitening creams, because they don't feel as if they look the way that they should. You know, we make this big point about transsexuals that say that they're born the wrong gender in the wrong body. Well, what about all these mixed race kids that are imprinting on either white or black, and they're neither, and they feel like they've been given the wrong body. This Farah obviously thinks that she's been given the wrong body. I mean, I feel really bad for her. You know, she's tearing up, saying how she struggled with this because she wanted to look beautiful. And yet she wasn't white, and yet her mother was white. So why isn't she white? Do you know what I mean? You can imagine these kids thinking that my mother's white, so why am I not white? And the guilt for that is on her mother. And what they're doing is, as you said earlier, Max, they're trying to place the guilt for that on white society. Henry explained.
In all probability, because her parents were fixated about race, because they had been a mixed race couple in a predominantly single raced society, that they probably don't discuss those kind of issues with the girl. And so she's just left pretty much think up ideas for herself. And it's amazing what children think of. I know of a lady whose son was this lady didn't really discuss where meat came from when she was feeding her son when he was a small boy. She didn't discuss where meat came from because she didn't want him to feel sorry for the animals and therefore not want to eat meat. And so she just never told him anything about it at all. Then one day when they were having a discussion, it was mentioned that meat comes from the slaughter of animals, and this little boy was just so relieved. And he was so relieved because nobody had told him where meat came from, and so he imagined that it came from dead people. And so that's why he was put off his food for years, because he thought he was eating dead people. And in reality, if they'd just told him straight off initially that meat comes from animal husbandry and from dead animals, then he would have been much, much happier about eating meat. And so you can see how, you know, the way that children think in those kind of terms can lead them when they're in a situation where they perceive that they're different from other children. They perceive that they're different from their parents. If their parents don't actually talk about these things to them, then they can develop all sorts of strange ideas.
Well, yeah, this child, you know, she wants to be with her own kind. She feels uncomfortable with in a class full of white people, and I'm sure she feels uncomfortable in a class full of black people as well. And then when she grows up, she's going to be told that the words that there are to describe her, words like mulatto, well, that's a bad word, and you shouldn't be using it. So even the identity that she could have, she's told that that's a negative as well. I mean, this plays into this as well, the way that they're trying to turn all the different words that there actually are for the different grades of intermixture of race, they're trying to turn them all into negative words and make them all into hate speech. So your own identity is hate speech if you're mixed race. So, I mean, nobody can say that we don't have compassion for mixed race people here at Radio Albion. Henry explained, "I think we should not have affinity groups. Nearly every single person in our group said they feel less comfortable in affinity groups than in the whole group." And I'm sure they did feel uncomfortable with this party going on next door, this black house party going on while they were having, they're all miserable and not being able to talk about what it means to be white, because they'd be accused of being racist if they did. And even when they didn't say anything, they were still accused of having unconscious bias. After Mr. Grant asked why the white pupils found it so difficult to discuss race, the students admitted that they were worried about upsetting others. One of the pupils said, "If we say something that they think is or might be racist, it might be asking a simple question. They might be like, 'Wow, that's so racist.'" Meanwhile, Henry said he was scared of saying something offensive, which could follow him around for life. Again, here we see the natural white children's instinct. They're worried about upsetting others. And then they're being told that they've got this unconscious bias, even though they're desperately not wanting to be racist. They're told that they are anyway.
They're Henry's unnatural fear that if he did say something wrong inadvertently, it would follow him around for life. So an adult has put that idea in his head. If you say something that a non-white person feels insulted or upset about, then that's a crime, and that crime will go down on your record, and it will follow you around for the rest of your life. Somebody said that to him to intimidate him into feeling fearful.
And also, I mean, he can't change being white. He's been told, well, you're white. You have all this privilege. You have all this unconscious bias. It doesn't matter how hard you try not to be a racist. You're still going to be a racist because you're white, and only white people can be racist. That's the message that comes from this. And again, I really can't stress this enough. You know, the white instinct is to help others. It's not to lord it over others and be racist over others. And that never has been the white instinct. We can see what the white instincts are in our innocent children here, who are more concerned about others than they are about themselves. And then when they ask the black kids what they think, they just think about themselves. That's the difference. Well, in another experiment, the children tried the privilege walk, with each child beginning at a start line and stepping backwards or forwards, depending on their answers to different questions. Questions included if anyone in your family has been stopped by the police, or if your parents speak English as a first language. So we can see by this that it's a privilege that your parents speak English. It's you're just born with the ability to speak English, and you know, it's not anything that you've actually bothered to learn at all, or it's the language of the country that you live in, so you should learn it. And this bit here about if your family's been stopped by the police, well, nobody would be stopped by the police just because the police wanted to pick on them. They always have a reason. It's always because the suspect suspect fits the description that's been given to them. And if more blacks get stopped by the police, that's because more people are given black descriptions of criminals to the police. I mean, that's the facts to it. But again, what this is about is telling these children that, that there's nothing they can do about it. They're just born with this. They're born with this guilt. They're born with the, with this privilege that they have, even though they're being reduced to tears and told they have this unconscious bias. It must be so confusing for these children to understand what's actually going on here. The white children typically step forwards each time and won the contest, with Dr. Nicola explaining it was clear many of the black and minority ethnic pupils have experienced racism. And of course, what she means by racism is just the results of black people's actions. Anything that black people don't like is blamed on white people now, basically. They get arrested by the police. Well, why are they arrested by the police? Because they commit more crimes. Is it racism if their parents don't speak English as a first language? No, it's not racism. It's because they've only just come to Britain. And yet we can see from this here, racism.
If your parents' first language is something other than English, it's actually an advantage because the child grows up bilingual. And yeah. So, it should be the other way around.
Yeah, that's an advantage.
The other thing as well is, are there any people that have never been stopped by the police? I can't imagine. I mean, I must have been stopped by the police something like 50 times just in the year that I was 16 when I first started riding a motorbike. Now, every time I passed a policeman, every time I passed a police car, I would be chased after and stopped and asked to produce my documents. You know, it's something that happens when you're young. It's something that happens if you do something that's regarded as being in any way sort of out there or adventurous, like riding a motorbike. If somebody asked me to actually quantify the number of times I've been stopped and spoken to by the police for various reasons, I couldn't even guess what the number would be.
Yeah, I've been stopped loads of times myself. I think the thing is, if you're a white kid and you get stopped by the police, you're not really likely to talk about it to your family. If you're a black kid and you get stopped by the police, you're going to whine about it being racism, and you're going to tell your whole family about it, and it's going to come, and because you're going to be able to blame institutional racism for this. Dr. Nicola added, the children thought they were alone in their experiences. Talking about these things as a group, they could see that they weren't. For the white pupils, there was discomfort and guilt. But as we introduced more activities, there was an understanding. What, the discomfort and the guilt went away, did it? Of course it didn't. The whole point of this is to induce discomfort in white children and instill a sense of guilt in them for being white. Later in the experiment, the children took a school trip to visit an art gallery and were amazed by the lack of diversity on show. Why would that be, I wonder? One of the boys gasped, "There's not much about black history," while Henry says, "It's literally all white." Mackay added, "I thought it was outrageous." Well, of course there isn't much black history because they didn't have a written language. They didn't invent the wheel in sub-Saharan Africa. They didn't record anything. What they have as black history is perceived grievances against white people nowadays. It's just all this nonsense about how the wicked white man went to Africa and enslaved them, which is not true. Their own people enslaved them, and that was all that they had to trade with the white traders when the white traders got there. I mean, if these children had actually been taught the truth about history, they would understand that. And when they went to the art gallery, they would have, instead of being amazed by the lack of diversity on a show, they would have been amazed by the talents that their ancestors had. And they would have, it would have stirred a desire within themselves to do the same thing. Whereas instead of that, what they're now, what these children are now going to be thinking is, well, we need to get more black artwork in there. We need to get more black history in there. So instead of their resources and their talents being devoted to improving themselves, their resources and their talents are now being diverted to improving the lives of black people once again.
If you look at a situation where a country has existed for, let's say, 20 centuries, 2,000 years, then there will be, but it's only been multicultural for the last 50 years, and of course there is going to be only like a 40th of the art that would have been produced in that country would have been produced by the immigrant people, and 39/40ths of it would have been produced by the indigenous people.
Yeah, there's quite obvious reasons for why there isn't, why there is a lack of diversity in the art gallery. But Dr. Rhiannon explained, "We are exposed at an early age to white people in positions of power, white heroes and white heroines. All of these influences tell us that white people are better than black and ethnic minority people in society." Well, no, they don't. They tell us that this was a white country. And in a white country, you have white heroes and white heroines. And if they were to go over to Africa, they would see that there are black heroes and black heroines. You know, it's not saying that our society teaches these people that white people are better than black. Our society teaches them that it's a white society, that the country was built by white people. It's a white history. You know, everything they're teaching these children is the opposite of reality. And it really should be no surprise to anyone that we've got all these problems with kids that are depressed and kids that really aren't fulfilling their real potential. They're not being invested in. You know, they're just being taught to have guilt. This is absolute child abuse that is going on here. And I really hope that somebody in the establishment says something about this, because I'm sure anybody seeing this and reading this and seeing that these white children are in tears at what's going on here, you know, they must be realizing it. It can't just be nationalists that can see what's going on here. So I just hope that's all we can do, I think, is just hope that somebody speaks up about it and also provide an alternative to it, as I said, which is what we do here at Radio Albion. Well, thanks for coming on today, Max.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Monday with more Real Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.